You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarland. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show. This is HR Happy Hour 237 with a working title of Taking Some Time to Make Work a Little More Human. And that's a very long title. We'll come up with a shorter one, but this is going to be an interesting show. It's all about sort of taking a little bit of a break, taking a step back, and maybe taking care of yourself a little bit. My name's Steve Bowes. Joining me, of course, Trish McFarland. Trish, how are you?
I'm good, Steve. How are you today?
I am well. And since I came up with an extremely long title for the show, I'm going to spend the next half an hour trying to figure out a better and shorter title for it. But,
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think maybe by the time we get to the end and you hear all the wonderful tips about how to make your work life more human, I think that'll help with the show title at the end.
All right. That's a good idea. Hey, it's cold. It is snowing sideways here once again in Rochester, New York. Trish, how is it in your part of the world?
Yeah, actually, it's sunny in St. Louis. I have to tell you, I'm calling in from my car, so apologies in advance, but for any background noise you might hear. But the sun is like so bright, it's like I'm burning up in this car. I feel like I need to have the windows down and the sunroof open or something. But yeah, it doesn't feel like the beginning of March. Usually here we have snow, so.
Well, you've got it better than I do right now. We've got the last clutches of winter hanging on here, but hopefully not for too much longer. So, hey, I think we should get right to it, Trish. We have a super guest coming back to the show for the first time, and I don't know how long, to talk about this subject today. Please welcome Lori Rudiman. Lori, how are you?
Hello, Steve. Hello, Trish. I am awesome, and it's a beautiful day here in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Doing it completely wrong. I always say if I ever get my feet back in North Carolina, if I ever do, I'm going to nail them to the ground. That's my plan.
It's beautiful here. I have no regrets. We've been here almost 8 years, and every time I travel back to the North or the Midwest, I just laugh. I mock people. I make fun of them. They don't know what they're missing. You know, it's great down here.
It certainly is. Say, Lori, so welcome back to the show. It's been a while. LoriRudiman.com, of course, is where you go for all things Lori. How have you been?
Good. I'm really excited to talk about SaaS-based technologies today and interoperability and all that kind of good stuff. So that's what we're talking about,
data security.
Yes, right.
Compliance.
Segmented data, raw files, all that kind of good stuff. Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I have a whole essay I can read about how you shouldn't make a data field a concatenated key. I could get into that right now.
Oh, my gosh.
We could do time
that is
something.
Spinning.
I just blacked out in the biggest coma. That's what happened here. So, yeah.
Well,
I'm happy to be back, and it's nice to talk to you both. And, you know, HR Happy Hour is kind of a legacy for me. This is really an important show. This, you know, Steve and Trish, you guys made me. I like to believe that. So I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, I feel partially responsible for some of the things that have happened later on. We'll just leave it
as
at
you
that.
Should.
I might have been show 3 or 4 probably was the first time you were on. It was that long ago. So that means just that we're all getting old, I suppose.
But, that's right. Hey. Do you remember that one time my husband called in just like randomly?
I do remember
that. That is so crazy.
I think we tried to do like an HR spouses show once maybe, and that fell apart.
Oh, that's terribly, right.
So insane. All right. Well, let's talk about some fun stuff today. What do you want to talk about?
Well, Lori, I mean, as you know, I was reading Lori's blog, and she had written a post about taking a retreat, and I had just come back from my own first ever retreat, and I immediately was like, you know, will you come on the show? Will you talk about it? This is before Lori even, like, went on the retreat, and so, you know, she said, well, let me go, and then we'll try and figure out what value comes from it. So I am grateful, Lori, because I think that, you know, we hear a lot about how we should be taking time for ourselves, especially as we're all, you know, getting older and time seems more and more valuable maybe. And I'm someone that's so driven, I literally never take time for myself. If I do, it's maybe to get my nails done or something silly like that, but never certainly leaving town on my own to actually spend time thinking about me. And when I decided to do that in January, it felt very strange because I almost was guilty about spending time on myself. And it was to think about work things and the direction of my work. And it was also to think about personal things, you know, about whether it was, you know, with a spouse, with my kids, with my parents who are aging. It's all these things I just felt like I wasn't taking time. So can you maybe just talk a little bit about what made you want to take the retreat and sort of how that started to unfold for you? How did you plan to do that?
Sure. Well, you know, first and foremost, I feel like taking a retreat is just a very privileged concept. And I mean that in both a kind of a normal use of the word, but also in a political sense. Right now, I live this really great life where I own my own business. I'm, you know, the owner of my time. And yet I was feeling very overwhelmed and feeling very disconnected. And I kept saying here at home, oh, if only I could get away from the internet, if only I could take a week off. And finally, for my birthday, my husband said, you're going to take a week off and I'm going to cover for you. I don't care where you go, go to New York, go to the beach, go wherever you'd like, but I'm going to help you do this. And Trish, like you, I felt very guilty because, like, you know, I have this dear friend, Sarah Brennan, who's raising two children in a blended family and she's struggling. And I have another friend here in North Carolina by the name of Sarah, and she's trying to get married and raising her own kids and working in human resources. And all of these women in my life are just so incredibly stressed and burned out. And here I am, you know, in what looks like a successful mode, feeling this as well. And I don't have half the concerns that they have. But nevertheless, I work hard. I needed a break. I had a spouse who would support me. So I said, yeah, I will take you up on this really generous gift. And so I booked a week out at the Outer Banks of North Carolina. Steve, you know the Outer Banks, right?
I do. So, a beautiful place of the world.
And in the wintertime, just so barren and desolate, but beautiful. And the weather was supposed to be good. And I said, I'm going to go. This is exactly what I'm going to do. And I really thought about structuring my week, structuring my time. And I thought maybe today we can talk about the things that made my retreat valuable and rewarding, but that are also easily replicable for other people who might not have a week, but only have a day.
I love that idea because I only took 3 days. And I can tell you, when you're talking about having that support back at home, that's key. You need someone to sort of pick up, you know, what you would normally be doing. And whether that's your work, you know, someone at work who can support that, or whether it's a spouse or a significant other, I think that's important to have that almost permission to go and really and be selfish a little bit, because you're right. I think people have this perception that they see who we are, who little glimpses of who we are on, whether it's social media or maybe on phone calls or whatnot with us. But, you know, we look like we have it all together. And the truth is that no one really has it all together. You know, everyone is overwhelmed in their own way. And we're all dealing with issues, or it could be medical, it could be parents. Like I said, it's all these things. And we don't really show the world that. So I love that you put out there publicly that you were taking this time, and I do hope that some of the tips you give today will help inspire people to feel like they deserve this. And like you said, whether it's one day or a week, I do feel like it's important for everyone to take the time and do it. And I hope to do it again. I do, because I don't feel like in the end that it was selfish. I came back a much more thoughtful, rested parent, wife, you know, colleague, in many ways. I just felt like I had made so many decisions, and it was really good use of time. So what are some of the tips? Like, I mean, if you're thinking about someone who's never done this before, what are some tips you could give on how do you get started? How do you decide how much time, where to go, what you're going to be thinking about?
Yeah. So when I work with my clients, before I even get started, I always do a pre-mortem and try to figure out how is this engagement going to fail? And I identify those failure points beforehand so we can bake it into the project plan. And I have in my mind, yeah, I have 10 forces of failure that are always waiting to sabotage me. So I go through them with my clients, and I did that for myself. And immediately I identified team and time is one of the ways that I could get this wrong. And so I thought, well, how do I align my personal team and my time to get this right? And so I made sure I had good people backing me up. And that was everybody from my babysitter who comes in and helps with the cats, to my husband, to my clients. I let everybody know that I was taking this time off, as weird as that felt, and I needed their help. And then I had a plan to manage my time before the retreat so I could meet my deadlines, make sure I needed to do laundry and, you know, go to the grocery store and all that kind of good stuff. And then during my retreat, I really thought beforehand, what do I want to do? And on what days am I going to do it? So it's not like I built this hard and fast master plan, but I really tried to figure out how I would spend my time. And I organized my deadlines and things I needed to do to avoid interfering with my overall plan. And then finally, I have to tell you, Trish, you probably felt this way as well. I built in some flexibility into my retreat because I needed it. I went out to the Outer Banks and there was this weird winter storm that began my week. So I get to the Outer Banks and, you know, I drive through this crazy snowstorm, and then I have four beautiful days. And then out of nowhere, Southern Virginia and North Carolina, Northern North Carolina, gets this crazy snowstorm again. And I had to come home. I had to cut my retreat short. So I came home and I was like, oh man, what am I going to do? I don't want to go home and sit on the internet. So I planned my final day of the retreat here in Raleigh, and I went out to some Raleigh parks that I've never seen. I took some walks. I took myself to lunch. I forced myself to stay off the internet. So Trish, I don't know if that first bucket resonates with you, but team and time were the first things that I thought about.
You're making great points, because I did go about a similar process. I definitely made sure I had anything that was due was done before I went, so I wouldn't be tempted to work. And you're right, staying off the internet was key. I remember at one point, I may not have planned mine as thoroughly, so I went to Indian Rocks Beach, Florida. And the reason I chose that area is, number one, we have this awesome little airport near my house. It's like 10 minutes from my house, and you can fly directly to Clearwater Beach for about $70 each way. So it's really nice. So that was part of it. But also, that's where I went growing up. And so it felt, in a way, like going home to me. It was restaurants and places I was familiar with, being alone. And being alone, you know, people may think, well, if you travel all the time for business, what's the difference? Or what's the difference of going on vacation to this type of place? It was very different because, you know, when you're traveling for business, you're really working. And there isn't much time to go do other things. And so I really wanted to find a place where I felt comfortable to just kind of spend time thinking. And for me, I went out on the beach a lot as well. I went to just sit for several hours. You know, I didn't have my phone. I didn't have music. I didn't have a book. I really, truly sat and thought. And I found that I did the same thing in the room that I had booked as well. I had a nice little living room and kitchen, so it wasn't quite just like a motel room. But, you know, I had a space to where I could sit, and I found myself sitting for hours with no TV, no radio, no distractions, and thinking. And to me, that was like, oh my gosh, I feel like I did more thinking in 3 days than I've done in the last 10 years. No lie. It was that monumental for me. So,
well, that definitely resonates with me. I get that.
It is different than a vacation, right? How did you find that, even if you had things planned, how did you find that that would be different than, say, if you had gone on a vacation with Ken, for example?
Yeah. So, you know, my husband is a wonderful man, and we go on these vacations, and for him, everything is completely scheduled. That's just his style. And I don't mind that. We've been vacationing together for 18 years, so that's perfect. But I baked in time, just like you, Trish, to just waste it, right? I never have the luxury of wasting time unless I'm wasting it on Facebook. And really, it's not a waste because that's brand building and engagement and blah, blah, blah. So I turned off my computer. I did do things like watch TV and videos that I would normally not watch. So I caught up on some shows. I watched a little bit of MSNBC in the evening and some of the political coverage, but you know, I did that kind of stuff. But I really tried to make sure that the time I spent alone was doing things that I wouldn't do in the confines of my home office. And, you know, for me, the second bucket of effort I had to make was about commitment, because it's so easy to say, I'm going to go to the Outer Banks, or I'm going to go to Florida, and I'm going to do this. And then you go and it all falls apart, and suddenly you're on Twitter for 2 hours, or you're dealing with a client who has an emergency. So for me, you know, Ken was committed to this, my clients were committed to this, and I really felt like it was almost a contract. I didn't want to disappoint everybody by wasting it. So I appreciated the fact that people were bending over backwards for me, and I wanted to do the same thing and make time for this. So I took, just like you, long walks on the beach. Sounds a little romantic, but when you're by yourself, I also did things I normally wouldn't do. Like, I'm not a hiker by nature, but out in the Outer Banks, they have these huge sand dunes. And so I went hiking at sunset, and I thought, man, why don't I do this more often? This is pretty great. And out of that, I came home thinking I need to make a better commitment to bring this into my life more often. But I also have to commit to helping my friends do this as well. So, Steve, before we started, we were kind of teasing you about making a commitment yourself to go do a retreat. And even if it's just a day, you need to go do this, Steve. How can we help you?
Yeah, well, thank you for thinking of me. I've been listening really interested in this conversation. I've made a couple of just a quick observations, then I'll answer the question. The first one is the internet is terrible. Because I've heard both of you say, oh, it's really important I wasn't on the internet. So we've learned the internet is just horrible. We've also learned sort of you need to be on a beach for mostly any of these good things to happen. And the sad thing for me is, like, I'm thinking about my retreat, and, like, I kind of wanted to be in a casino somewhere, or maybe at a basketball game, I think. I guess that's
fine.
I would say this. For me, it's a little bit different because – not different from you guys. You guys travel a lot too. I travel a lot as well. For me, it's always been the difficulty in saying, even not so much a retreat, like to go away somewhere that's not like a family obligation or that kind of thing,
right.
Or to feel the guilt of going away again when I'm away a lot as it is. And so I think, and not everyone's in that situation, of course. Lots of people just have sort of, you know, jobs which don't require travel and they're home all the time. And then it's like, yeah, I could see how it's easier to pull that off. But I do think the most important thing also I think I pulled from your guys' observations was, hey, this doesn't work at all if you do manage to get your schedule together, you get some support from home and from work and so on and so forth, and then you get to some place and then just do the same things you could be doing anywhere or that you normally would be doing anywhere. That's like completely the wrong approach, right?
And it is, absolutely.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
I think your observations are spot on. And one of the myths of a retreat is that you're supposed to have some like eat, pray, love experience where you meditate and you get in touch with yourself. Sometimes it's just good enough to go for 4 hours and go to that casino and stick a bunch of nickels in a slot machine and zone out, yeah. Right? You know, do something like take a long shower. Some of the best ideas I have are when I'm driving. And that's why it was really important for me to go on a retreat where I could drive somewhere, because that 4 hours in the car was so healthy. And my mind was just able to work in a way that's different than when I'm sitting in front of the computer, when I'm running errands or going to Target. So whatever it is, wherever you can kind of get in that area where you flow. And Steve, for you, it might be a basketball game or the nickel slots. I don't know. You should do it. You should absolutely do it. You need to make that commitment today, Steve.
I am. I'm actually thinking about the Summer League NBA trip in July. I've got to talk to the guys about it. So let me ask you guys, this is a question for both of you. How do you sort of approach this in terms of I'm going away? You both decided at some point I'm going to go do this thing for 3 days, 7 days, whatever number of days. Do you go into the saying I want to come back from those 3 days having done X or having solved Y? Is that part of the equation in your mind when you do this?
Well, Trish, why don't you answer that? That's a good one for you.
Yeah, for me, I didn't have that going into it because I didn't want it to be that structured. I was really just to the point, and this is why it resonates when Lori said at the beginning, I was just overwhelmed. I was completely feeling like I'm not doing a good job really at anything. You know, I was so overwhelmed with work and was saying yes to everything. And so maybe my real goal was just to go away and get my head around, how do I say no? How do I say no to commitments my children are making because they're very busy? How do I say no to things that I'm saying yes to that I was just spread too thin. So for me, it was more of a mental health retreat, if anything. And I was just looking to be quiet. That's the only way I can describe it. I just wanted to have quiet time because I never, never, never get that. Or I keep myself so busy that I don't appreciate when I get 5 minutes of quiet, maybe now. And now that I've done that, I feel like I'm really truly approaching every single day in a different way. So I didn't have that as a plan, I guess, is the answer, but that was the result, is that I came back feeling like it's okay to focus on Trish once in a while. And the one thing I did, I can tell you, this is something that I kind of decided while I was there. I decided I wanted to do a cleanse. I've been feeling really unhealthy, you know, not just like medical issue unhealthy, because I think everybody has a little stuff going on, but, you know, I'm on the thinner side, but I've gotten unhealthy, and I really needed to eat better and to sleep better and do some of those things, and I wasn't ever starting that. And when I came back, actually started while I was on the retreat, but you know, I've lost 6 pounds since coming back, and I'm you've been around me even at events. I'm eating really, really healthy, even if that means eating stuff that isn't wonderful. So yeah, so those are the things that came out of it. I've learned it's okay to be quiet and not be doing anything, and then it's focusing on treating myself with a little more love than I had before.
Well, that absolutely resonates with me. You know, one of the things that happens when I start an event with a client is that we have a scope, and oftentimes there's scope creep, or we get a bloated scope of our project, and suddenly we're tackling things that, frankly, I'm not getting paid for, right? And so it's like, no, we got to pare this down. So for me, I really took a look at the scope of my retreat, and, you know, it would have been great to say, I want to go away to the Outer Banks and write a novel. That was never going to happen. I don't have those skills, you know? So I tried to take a look at the scope of what I wanted to tackle, and it was really small. I just wanted to read. I wanted to write and try my hand normally at creative writing. I mean, I think that's something important that I want to fold into my daily life. And so I did that. I did some yoga. I got to bed before 11 o'clock. You know, I didn't rock anybody's world. I drank some champagne. I had a good time. But I tried to make sure that I didn't anticipate that my life would change in any major way during that week, because if you keep your expectations low, you won't be disappointed. And so that's what I tried to do. And during that week, both of you may know, I had a friend who just recently passed away from lung cancer. During that week, she was in the last kind of stages of her chemo and had a stroke from chemotherapy. And so it was really important for me to be okay with not being on the internet, constantly obsessed with her status, to kind of check in from time to time, to know that I was giving love and support in the way that I could from a distance, and just to kind of take it easy. So I kept my scope very limited that week, and I kept my expectations checked, and I ended up having a great time. And in many ways, like you, Trish, I learned a couple things. Like, I learned I need to be outside regardless of the weather for 30 minutes a day. I just need to walk. I just need to get some sunshine. I need to get a break, and I need to breathe fresh air that isn't recycled either from a corporate office or my home office. So that was really important for me. And I also learned building up to this, I talked a lot about my retreat, and I thought, oh my God, that was really obnoxious. If I could do it all over again, I would maybe tamp that back a little bit and do more of a lessons learned after the impact, because I fear that I made people feel bad that they couldn't take a retreat. And what I really wanted to do was inspire others. So I'm glad that I have this opportunity to talk a little bit about, I don't know, working in a more humane, balanced way afterwards. And I think, you know, in retrospect, I would have been quieter on the front end. So those are my lessons learned.
That's interesting. I find it that, especially because you and I are both people who do tend to keep our schedules very busy, personally and professionally, that we wound up sort of doing the opposite when it came to time to take for ourselves, that we really had very low expectations. And I think that's important. And you know what? I do like, I honestly, just as someone who reads your blog, I like knowing that you were doing that because it is an example. It shows that you can be very busy and still do it. So I wouldn't be too hard on yourself doing that
Thank you.
Front end. But I can understand that. I can understand in hindsight how you might say, well, I would have done that differently. Could you maybe hit on a little bit? You mentioned briefly about, you know, sort of having your clients in your corner. I did the same thing with mine. I told them, I'm like, please do not call me late. And they were very supportive of that. What did you find sort of after it was over? Were they respectful of your time away? Did they want any kind of follow-up to see how things had gone? Any kind of feedback from a client perspective?
Yeah, I had two interesting client perspectives. One is that I checked in with one of my clients midweek, so I broke my rule, and they got mad at me. They were like, what are you doing? You know, like, we got this. Why are you breaking the rules that you set out? I'm like, oh, dang it, you're right. And then when I came back, they were all very curious, like, what'd you learn? How can we do this? So it was really an opportunity for peer-to-peer support. And so, you know, part of what I do when I work with clients is I really just end up being their best friend, right? Their advocate, their coach, their buddy. And if we get some HR or marketing stuff done, that's really great. Who cares, you know? So I have really tried to bake that into some of the services that I offer. Like, if you need some help and you want to take a few days, let me know what I can do. And so I've been very vocal about saying that. The other thing that I've done is, Steve, just like I'm kind of assaulting you to take a retreat, which is probably not the right way to do it, you know, shrewing you into doing it. I'm doing that with my husband as well. So I'm like, where are you going? What are you doing? You want to go play golf? And so he has identified something that he's wanted to do for a really long time. And he wants to go take that BMW driving class down in Greenville, South Carolina. And I said, yeah, you know, like, you gave me a week away. I'm going to do that for you. Like, what do I need to do? A webinar? Like, how do we pay for this? But it's really important that so anybody wants to pay me to do a webinar, I'm down with that. But the point is that as much as it was a gift to me, I want to be able to pay the gift forward. And so I'm sensitive to, you know, starting locally, starting with the man who has given so much to support me. I want to give it back. So that's what we're doing in our house. So Steve, he's going to go drive BMWs. You're going to go to the summer league. It's all pretty awesome.
Yeah,
you know, it's great.
I think so. You know, it's really interesting to hear you guys talk about this. And I one other sort of quick observation I had. I was a little bit worried doing the show that this is really going to sound very first world problem-y, right?
Yeah.
And it does to some extent. But
Where
it doesn't to me, though, and this is maybe the show for another time, you know, Trish, especially when we plan the show out, is I think a lot of this comes from how the expectations of work, accessibility, availability, supported by technology, really completely changed our relationship, particularly with work. And I know this is not all just about work, what you guys are talking about, but I think at some level it's a big part of it. Because sometimes, like what you're talking about like making sure no one contacted you and you weren't, you know, this is what we used to just call vacation, right? To some extent, right? Like, like when your parents were working, right? Maybe they still are, I don't know. But when they were not working, they were not working, right? And so then I'm not saying they didn't have other stresses and other problems and other needs to sort of take time to themselves, whatever. But this idea that, boy, I've got to really be explicit about, I've got to take 4 days away and no one can contact me. Unless you were some, you know, C-level executive, this was not a big deal in the vast majority of people's lives, right?
It still isn't.
Right?
Yeah.
And
I know. But
I think technology and the expectations and the demands and everybody you know, right? And everybody I know seems like they're working all the time. And, you know, you go to bed at 11 o'clock and you wake up and you've got 17 new emails, right, from the night before. And you're like, when, you know, it never really lets up. And I do think – some of what you guys talking about is at least in part due to how we've allowed this kind of, well, you know, work is always there and it's always accessible to it. And we play into it a little bit. We, you know, we feed it a little bit ourselves, but mm-hmm. but it's kind of a self-fulfilling thing too. And so I just think it's more prevalent, the need to do these kinds of things now, than it used to be, at least in part due to the expectations of work and how technology is changing work.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I also hear,
go ahead.
Well, Trish, I was just going to observe that. I think there's also a gender differential as well. And I hate to play the gender card and the first world card and all these different cards that we're playing. But I think, you know, there are studies out there that still show the imbalance of housework, the imbalance of burden in a lot of modern American homes. And so what I hear more and more from women who are professional, they're running their own businesses, and there's just this guilt. There's guilt that they can't get it all done. There's guilt that they've hired someone to help them. And for me, you know, I had concerns about coming on here and sounding first world as well. So whatever situation you're in, make the most of what you can make. Tap into your local community, tap into your friends, tap into your clients. And even if you can only get 4 hours away, it's healthy to start reclaiming some of that, you know, as your own. You need 4 hours a week, right? So Trish, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, I agree with what you're saying, too. And, Steve, I feel like it's not a first world thing, because if I'm thinking about it, it's really something that maybe if you're a leader in any type of industry, say that you're in manufacturing, right, and you've got even hourly people, being able to give someone even an hour to say, you know what, go to our local park or go to the library and just be with yourself, be quiet with yourself somewhere, and encouraging them. It made me think when Lori was talking, I had this boss years and years ago when I worked at PwC, and she was the lead tax partner, female. She was in her 40s at the time, very driven person, and she would come by my office every now and then. And this one day, I remember it was right as we were planning for, you know, performance reviews and compensation and all that. So I was working probably 70, 80 hours a week, and it was a beautiful sunny day, and she came by like right in the middle of the day, and she just popped her head and she said, you know what? It's gorgeous outside. Get out of here. Go take a few hours. And I haven't thought about that moment in a long time, but that's what I did. I didn't go get on a phone or a computer somewhere. I did just go to a park, and I went and just was outside. And I think I read a book or something, I mean, at the time. But I think the point is about giving yourself permission, because when I think of my parents going on vacation, this is different. A mental retreat for me is something that's such a luxury that we don't give that gift to ourselves very often. And even if I have an hour now, I will definitely think differently about that. I will take that hour, whereas before I would have filled it with either trying to get ahead on a client or trying to do something for my children maybe, or my parents or whoever. I don't know. I feel that it's very applicable to people regardless of your income level, regardless of whether you're doing a more a mechanical type, you know, task job versus a thought leadership type job. I think it can apply to everyone.
Yeah, Trish, that's so great. Hey, do you guys have a couple more minutes? I think we're a little over. I have one more question that I want to ask. I want to kind of tie this back around, though, to some what you were kind of just saying, Trish. And here's my question. Since this is the HR Happy Hour show, we got to talk a little bit about HR. I did, in my extensive research before the show, which was like just a minute, I did one Google search. But here's what I searched. The only thing I could think about sort of in the workplace, sort of corporate-y kind of feel for this, was the idea of a sabbatical, right? Some organizations offer their organizations actually formal sabbatical programs. And they vary a lot, years of service and how long they are, whether they're paid or unpaid, those kinds of things. Is this something that organizations should be kind of thinking about a little bit more, whether it's a formal sabbatical program or, like Trish just mentioned, some informal instances of leaders or managers kind of giving people a little bit of space for themselves? Is this happening more? Should it be happening more? And what can HR do in this domain?
Well, you know, years ago when I worked at Monsanto, we used to have a program there for technical fellows where you'd work for X amount of years and you'd get some time off because it was still very important to publish and do research. And so I kind of grew up in that environment. And then again at Pfizer, we had kind of a sabbatical and a fellows program. But that's a little bit different. And I know there are trends out in Silicon Valley where they either force you to take a week off and they shut off your email, or, you know, there are all these different things happening out there. I think part of what is wrong and broken in our society is this notion of work. You have one echelon of our society that's working just to, you know, pay the bills and to get it done, and they're constantly falling behind. And then you have another group of workers who feel that work is both a part of their, it's like a vocation, but it's also their identity. And so they're really, really driven. And I think there needs to be a conversation in our communities that it's okay to separate yourself from what you do. And it doesn't have to be a formal sabbatical program. It could be your normal 2 weeks of vacation that you get a year. But you are allowed to stop thinking about work without feeling like a traitor or feeling mediocre. And so for me, it was really important to take those few days in my own life to get off the grid, to go to the Outer Banks and stop thinking about human resources and technology and marketing. But I don't see the sabbatical program coming back anytime soon for regular Americans. And I actually don't see it for corporate professionals all that often either.
Yeah. I didn't either when I did a bit of research. Go ahead, Trish.
I don't think that you need anything so formal either. Again, I think if I were a leader anywhere of any type of employee, it's about recognizing and getting to know your people more as people. So here's an example. If you have someone, you know, it's almost spring, right? And if you have someone on your team that you know loves gardening, but they never get time to do that, maybe that's the one thing you offer them and say, you know what? For the next month, take off early every Thursday and just go garden. Go focus on, like, do what you love. Or if you know that there's something that you can just really help support them being either outside or in the environment or getting quiet time, do that one thing. You know, if it's someone you know would love more time to just read a book, let them go. Let them go do that. Because I think that the what you're going to get back as a company will be 10 times more than what that person would have given anyway. And that's not the reason you do it, but there are some good outcomes because you're going to have people that feel more relaxed. They feel like they're taking care of themselves better. And what I'm learning very slowly this late in life is that when I feel like I'm taking care of me a little bit, I am a better worker. I am a better spouse. I am a better mother. I'm a better everything. Better daughter, you know, when I take care of me too. Because if you run yourself ragged, then I'm just bitter about all of it, quite honestly. You know, and maybe that's something we don't say enough. We don't share when we're stressed. And Lori, I know you mentioned at the top of the show, you know, several people in your life that are feeling overwhelmed. I mean, maybe the next step isn't just us encouraging Steve to do this, but how do we, if we know of people in our industry, for example, who are needing to take breaks and just refocus on themselves, how can we start helping and being that support system for those people? And it might not be someone you know very well, but that could also forge a friendship or a relationship down the road. If you just see someone that you think is really busy and just reach out to that person and say, hey, what can I do to help you so that you can take an hour or two this week for yourself or 4 hours for yourself? Is there any way I can step in and help be that support to you? And I don't know. I feel like it's a grassroots thing that you can make these things happen without very formal programs.
Yeah, I love it. I wonder how much of this is the fact that we're American and we don't have paid leave and we don't have really formal, you know, vacation policies versus someone in Italy who gets like a million weeks off and they're like, what are you guys talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Because their vacations really are retreats and they're traveling the world and taking the month of August off. So it could just be that we are immensely American and sick of being American, although I don't want to put it that way because I want to make America great again, right? Everybody gets
married. I've heard there's lots of folks talking
about that. Corey Riedemann for
president. Oh, jeez.
Hey, guys, this has been loads of fun. We probably should put a bow on it in the next minute or two. What's you're going to sum this up. Trish, you go first. The retreat, you know, what's the one thing? You're going to convince me to go on my retreat. What are you going to tell me?
I think it just goes back to give yourself quiet time, whatever that means for however long that means, give yourself that quiet time to really focus on you, what you want, because it does make you better if you take that time and it will, it doesn't need to be at 3 o'clock in the morning when you can't sleep because you're too overwhelmed, right? So shift that. Instead of staying awake an hour or two a night because you're too busy and too overbooked, use the time wisely, and that way you'll sleep much better at night.
All right. Love it. Love it. Lori, what's your one thing I need to remember from this show?
Well, you mentioned the word guilt. And so that resonated with me, Steve, you know, and for me, get over the guilt, because you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. So you might as well go take 4 or 5 or 6 hours for yourself, or 4 or 5 or 6 days. It doesn't matter. You're screwed either way. Right, so go enjoy it.
I'm going to do it today. You know what? After this podcast is over, I'm going to the gym. How's that sound?
How's that sound?
There you go.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Hey, Lori, quick. Let's just do the plugs. What do we want to mention? What's coming up? What's happening in your world that we need folks to know about?
Well, pretty exciting. After this, I might go clean some litter boxes, so that's really cool. And I am going to be at Work Human, which is the Global Force premier event that talks about work-life balance and bringing some humanity and recognition into the workforce. And that is May 9th through 11th in Orlando, Florida. And that's workhuman.com. And if anybody wants to go, I have a discount code. Don't pay full price, right? I mean, come on, don't pay full price. Just talk to me and I'll give you my code. So that's it.
That's an awesome an event. Trish and I will be there as well, right?
Can't wait to see you guys.
Yeah.
And that actually is probably pretty much the only event in HR that a subject like this that we just spent 40 minutes talking about would probably fit on the agenda.
Right. I mean? Yeah.
So
I do.
If you liked this conversation, I think you'll like that event too. You'll find a lot there to like. Lori, thanks so much for doing this today. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Well, I missed you guys. I'm big fans, and I will see you on the internet.
Trish.
Thanks, Lori.
Trish, great stuff. I love it. You convinced me. I'm retreating soon.
Good. I think everyone should. And as Lori mentioned, I mean, Work Human is such a great place to, if you're thinking about going somewhere on a retreat, make that your retreat, right? Do it in Orlando and follow it up with a day or two with the Work Human event. And I think you'll come back not only refreshed, but inspired, and you'll have lots of ideas of how you can actually make your work life more human as opposed to so mechanical as we all tend to face.
Awesome. So, all right, we should let it go then, Trish. You've got things to do. I've got things to do. Anything you need to mention right now, or we'll let this go out to the big, broad internet?
Let's let it go to the big, broad internet.
All right, let's let it go. Thanks again, Lori Runeman. Thank you, Trish. This is Steve Bowes. This has been the HR Happy Hour Show. We will.
Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour Show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.